This week, it's just the two of us. Welcome to Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes have been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years, with a focus on building clean energy homes in sustainable communities.
It's been a bad week for Mr. Pickerill. I'll tell you why later, but both his clubs we're going to talk about. And we're also going to have news, views, gossip, trains, hopping, and all the normal things. And talking of normal things, let's start with a roundup of the UCL Step 5 in the North Division with the aforementioned Mr. Pickerill.
On a weekend that could have decided the championship, Sherwood Colliery fluffed their lines by dropping 2 points in a goalless draw at Eastwood. And Lincoln United scored in the 3rd minute at Skegness to get all 3 points. But it's a little too late, as the Wood only require 4 points from their remaining 4 matches to secure the title. At the other end, both the clubs in the relegation battle won. Pinchbeck 2-0 over Belper in front of a crowd of 23, while Hucknall scored 2 in 2 second-half minutes to win at Ashby Ivanhoe. Loughborough Students secured a playoff place with a victory at Deeping. Melton should join them. A 3-1 victory over Heaner means 6 points from as many matches will see them over the line. The biggest crowd of the day was unsurprisingly at Station Road for Newark Sleaford Derby, Jamie Williamson's 93rd minute equaliser doing nothing to calm the antics of the visitors' dugout.
Yeah, I think that probably summed up the afternoon. I think Sherwood's got enough in the bag to win it, David, and I still think Lincoln's got other things on their mind at the moment. At the bottom, I want to put any money on both Pinchbeck and Hucknall winning, but it keeps it interesting.
Yeah, at the top, I think the champagne's is almost open. It's on ice for Sherwood. I suspect Lincoln United will probably be successful through the playoffs if they don't win it that way. I mean, I noticed they won their title last night in the cup, so they got a hard team to beat. At the bottom, the Hucknall win wasn't quite a surprise for me, because we'd seen them the week before and they were played very, very well, particularly in the second half. Pinchbeck, nothing against Pinchbeck. I love going there. I love the people there, but they weren't offering a huge amount when they played us really well. They after about the first 20 minutes. And yeah, I guess they're just making a good fist of a bad situation, I guess.
Into step six and trying to actually put anything into writing is very difficult because it's that tight. So step six, David.
The playoff race continues to intrigue. Leaders Bournes' victory over Newark means 8 points from 7 games will secure the title. Clipston have confirmed a playoff place, and it looks like 3 from 4 to join them. Newark have got 7 matches left, but crucially 6 of those are away from the carpet. Harrowby are back in the top 5, Dunkirk are knocking on the door, and Kirby Muxlow make the hopefuls. It's now 1 defeat in 6 for bottom club Renneth, and only 3 points separates the bottom 4 clubs. In the Northern Counties East League, Shirebrook's impressive victory at Parkgate keeps them on top, but the Sheffield clubs still have a massive 7 matches in hand to chase down the 9-point gap.
Okay, so pick the nitty-gritty out of all that lot. I think nerves are beginning to come into it. Newark has gone 6 games undefeated. They've now lost 2 on the bounce. Harrowby win 1, Harrowby lose 1. Dunkirk can't seem to string 2 or 3 games together. I think at the end of all this, it's which of those older than near. The good thing is those clubs have created a bit of a gap between Birstall and Blackstone. So it's clearer at the moment that probably only one of them will miss out. Which one that will be goes back to those nerves.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to put any money on that one. I think Bourne have done what they've done all season. They've been reliable. I think they've sewn it up. I think you could pretty much put your mortgage on Bourne at very, very low odds. But the others, I wouldn't like to guess who will go through, because there's too many sides there, as you say, that are all still within. Just got to get a win and they're suddenly back, aren't they?
It is. And it gets difficult. It's okay in any form of football, isn't it? You know, oh yeah, we're going to win this one. This should be a win. And then the consequences that come into it, and suddenly it doesn't happen, and we see it right from the very top. So they've got nobody's got anything to be ashamed about. Just put a couple of three games together, lads, and whichever one of you does it, I think will guarantee a playoff place. Renov, one defeat in six, and they're still bottom of the table, David. It's unbelievable. There you go. Again, teams fighting for survival, suddenly picking up points. Selsdon picked up a point on Wednesday night. That again, you can't choose, can you? It's life is very, very different at this time of year for many different reasons. Anyway, let's go into the feed at least, because it's just as chaotic there.
Suddenly, Stapleford looked vulnerable in the Notts Senior League after Saturday's disappointing draw against Borough. The lead over Wollaton is 12 points, but the Challengers have five matches in hand. Over in Lincolnshire, march to the title continues with a 6-0 victory at Lincoln United Development. Crowell scored eight against Brigg, but Appleby Frodingham dropped 2 points at Wiverton and dropped to seventh, a position that is not good enough for pyramid qualification. CMA club Pinkston are also chasing Step 6 football and reversed their home defeat against mid-table Bakewell to get the match played. It backfired spectacularly with a 3-1 defeat. I should really read my notes before I read them out.
Yeah, I mean, Pinkston did it, everything for the right reasons. Give up home advantage, get a game played against what was almost a nailed on 3-point game. And now they've lost the complete advantage to South Normanton. I keep going back to the same story. It's that time of year. But a team that you can rely on to win week in, week out, Cornish Corner.
A goal in each half brought the 3 points home from Carrick for the mighty Lizard Argyle. With five matches left, the Lifeboatmen are up to fifth. How many are in that division?
14.
14. Oh, well, the top half then, aren't they? That's
The top
yeah,
half, but they're
top half, yeah.
a country mile off of promotion. But there you go. So this is grassroots football, of course it is, with Dave Pickerell and Mick Bradley. It is a two of us this week, and it's two of us for reasons that it could become very apparent, because our subjects are local and very close to home. And we start with the obvious one, and that's the massive story that Newark and Shield United are once again homeless. For the ones that don't know the story, they played at the Works, a Works football ground between 1901 and 19 and sorry, 1901 and 2020, unceremoniously booted off by a property developer, spent a year at Basford, 2 years at Collingham, and now Collingham, in their wisdom, have decided that they don't want to ground share anymore, which, you know, it was a 2 year deal, and it's the end of that deal. So that is fair comment. The question is, David, and I know you're fairly well, you know, you are connected, you are part of the club, so I don't want to put you in a position that you don't want to be in. So I'm going to try and generalize it a little bit for any club that is ground sharing. Newark and Shield would have the first problem is they've got to find somewhere, and they've got to find somewhere quickly. The second problem is it's got to be up to Step 5 standard. So quickly, you're counting out 75% or probably more of the local grounds. And add that one to what
That's
is possibly the worst winter that we've had. Who's going to want to ground share on a grass football pitch?
well, that's what I was about to jump in with there. I said it's unless somebody has got an artificial surface, who is going to want to at the moment? Because the problem is a lot of clubs are struggling to keep their pitch fit for alternate weekends to play Saturdays in the occasional midweek game. If it's taking you nearly 14 days to recover a pitch, you're not going to want to share it with somebody else to come and trample it down again and put it 7 days back every time on recovery. And close to home, it does narrow down the options quite significantly with that, or you have to consider travelling further away again, don't you? Which is not necessarily a great idea. And as we've seen in some cases, the artificial pitches need work and maintenance and aren't. Don't sustain that well if they're getting lots and lots of football played on them.
Without going into the rumours, because I don't like doing rumours, so I'm not going to try and progress on the grounds that they may be going to. But the one that keeps coming back again is a return to the spiritual home. It keeps coming back, so I think there's some credibility in it, or the story wouldn't keep appearing. Apparently, the owner is will possibly be agreeable to a sale. I mean, that would be one hell of a coup, wouldn't it, David? But it ain't going to happen quickly.
No, because although when the club left, it was a step for high ground, the pitch has had 2 years of growing wildly and has had all sorts of machinery across it while there's been test boring going on for the possibilities of putting houses on it. The stand's gone, the terrace area's gone, and really, as you'd expect, that's gone wild in 2.5 years. And because the fencing and stuff hasn't really been maintained, the clubhouse has been vandalized, smashed up. I think what was the Jubilee Room, the sort of what you'd use for the hospitality, that's pretty much been smashed up altogether, I think. So yeah, it's not a weekend project to get that up and running again. It's not like there's an already grown pitch and the terrace is in there. All you've got to do is probably get some portable seating, hired from the local marquee company or something and put that up. There's an awful lot of work. That isn't going to happen anytime, anytime soon, really.
I would suggest it's probably a good 18-month period before anything was fit to go on there.
Yeah, I would think so. And I mean, if you've got to grow a pitch, stuff like that, I'm no groundsman, but I would have thought in an ideal world, most clubs probably would want the pitch to be six down 6 months before they started play on it, probably. Unless you're very lucky and you can do a sort of Premier League club and you can buy new turf in every other game. I can't see that happening. It's a great idea, and I'd love to think it would happen. It'd be walkable for most of the supporters. And yeah, it would be quite a coup to go back to the spiritual home of the club, but I don't think we'll be talking about returning this time next year on the podcast.
So you await to where the Highwaymen are going to be playing next season. We await to where the Highwaymen are going to be playing next season. Just let's hope that the hierarchy of the club find somewhere. County Cup news next, David. Far and near.
Well, we begin with the news that the Hearts Charity Cup final was postponed, allowing Potters Bar Town to play a league game. That was postponed due to a waterlogged pitch. We await a new game for the final, which, being played on 3G, would have gone ahead on the original date. I always thought that the County Cups took preference over the league game, but
I did
never
as well,
mind.
but
Yeah.
Potters Bar are what, step three, aren't they? So they
I
probably
think
thought
so.
I was doing the right thing, but
Yeah.
crazy.
Fair enough. Yeah. It probably would be. All the Leicestershire finals are played at the county's headquarters at Holmes Park, with Anstey Nomads playing Loughborough Students next Tuesday. Lincoln United won the county trophy after a penalty shootout victory over the holders Boston Town. After both sides put their first six efforts away, the poachers had two chances to win the match, but they skied both attempts.
Yeah, of course, Boston dramatically won it last season, and I suppose Lincoln United was always going to be favourites for this trophy. Lincoln should do it different to Nottingham should do it. Lincoln should have their own trophy for Step 5 and Step 6 clubs, which is the second tier trophy. Anything above Step 5 is the Senior Cup, shall we call it? But there again, David, they've got a lot more senior teams than they have in Nottinghamshire, but I do like a cup that is specifically for Step 5 and Step 6 clubs. You could almost involve Step 7 clubs in that second cup. I think it's a bit of a mismatch with Baysford and Carlton up against the rest in Nottinghamshire.
Yes, and we have seen it as well in one of the other competitions where you've got a step seven side's been playing somebody that's about three divisions below. And I think wasn't the one draw last year that you'd sort of got Team A were playing Team B's reserves while Team B's first team were playing Team A's reserves. The mismatch was huge, so there were some really big scores that appeared in that division. I like
Yeah.
the fact that Lincolnshire Cup's played on a, if you like, professional ground almost. The fact that the game last night was at Boston United, and the game on Friday night for the, if you like, the lesser of the two trophies is going to be played at Sincil Bank. So that makes it a special event for the teams involved as well, doesn't it?
And so it should be, and well done to the Lincolnshire FA for going that extra mile, for getting, for making sure those games are being played on. And you know, it can be done, can't it? Because you know, Lincoln City are still, their season is far from complete, yet they can still get on that ground. And the farce that Newark and Sherwood had last year with Notts County and ended up playing on Eastwood's ground was a farce. It's as simple as that. The senior trophy of a county really should be the showpiece match for the county. It's a showpiece for the players. A lot of those players are only going to get to play in one or two of them ever. And to play it on just a normal Step 5 league ground, with no disrespect to Eastwood, I think was absolutely shocking. Now, talking of shocking, we find out last week that Ollerton Town, now Ollerton's having, to put it bluntly, a season from hell. We all know that. They were charged £198.50 for three officials for a Step 6 match. And David, I don't know what you think, and I know you know a bit more about the story than I do. I think it's nothing short of a scandal from the league.
No, I saw this when it came out, and Liam, bless him, who's working miracles with amazing fortitude in basically a situation that's not going terribly well for him at the moment, he posted this. And then I think when somebody had put scandal or something like that, and he kind of explained it, said, well, the issue was all three officials were obviously going to be claiming their expenses, and they came from the East Riding of Yorkshire. And apparently earlier, when he found out when the appointments were, and he sort of questioned it, and well, maybe could only the along lines of could the referee travel from there, and that we could use more local lines, you know, assistants. I was about to use the old term there, and apparently no, that was the appointment. That's what it was. So really, the three officials travelled, you know, a fair old distance, and quite rightly, they're going to want to claim to travel that. And you would have thought, really, are there no local guys you could appoint, or ladies you could appoint?
I mean, the match involved a team that's got 4 points all season, that have been all but relegated, conceded three figures in goals. To put it bluntly, it was a nothing match. It's just a question of how many the opposition would score. And that's no disrespect to Ollerton. Does that really represent paying £200 out on officials for the match? I don't think it does.
No, I mean, I didn't see what the crowd is, but I think they charge £5, or they were charging £5 to get in there. So if you've got 20, that's £100. If you've got 40, that's £200. If you've got 60, that's £300. They took £800 on the gate, but straight away, a big chunk of that's gone out, you know, has gone out the door straight away. There's other costs they've got. I think somewhere Liam probably put that game ran at a loss. And again, when you're at the bottom and everything's not going your way, it's just another sort of thing to drag you down, isn't it?
You know, I have this big thing about the league should be here to help the clubs and not be draconian. And I think in this instance, the North East Counties would have been a little bit draconian. Anyway, you're listening to Grassroots Plus, and we are proudly sponsored by Augusto Homes. Last week's big question, I know it was going to be a difficult one, and I didn't expect a great amount of answers, but what did we get, David? Because we asked if you knew anybody out there that you've seen running around on a grassroots park pitch who had the ability to go on for Stardom, but for whatever reason didn't. Did anybody come back to us, David?
There was two or three. Steve Mack, he said, I saw John O'Leary playing for Fantail in an FA Sunday Cup final, and he was a genius. And Steve very kindly put a link to it, and I've read up the story, and it's quite interesting. Steve said there's a lot of adverts in it, but that was quite interesting. The other two that I've got, I think there's a bit of an in-joke going here, because in a lot of cases, they were just using the player they were recommending, or who I believe they're recommending's Twitter handle. I was trying to work out who they were. Anyway, Craig Embleton said, it's got to be, and I think this is Matt Oller with a big smiley face, his Ollerton debut was something to behold. And then somebody else, and I think it's probably the gentleman's young lady, put something along the lines, if he was that good, he'd be living with a fairly expensive wag now, or something like that. So there was obviously a bit of humour going on there. And then Calvin Green said, Josh Turner. Josh Turner replied with a crying, smiling, laughing emoji. So, yeah, it was always going to be difficult, that one, for people. But thank you for the people that responded. And I had a lot of fun trying to decipher who, why, and where for those. But it was good fun.
Right. I expect a bigger response this time, David. And I'm sure we'll get one, because we're going to be back to photos. You all enjoyed sending your photos in last time. So let's have some photos this time. Quite simply, of disused grounds.
Yes, that will be very, very interesting to look at. Before we go to the next question, we did put the challenge up for last week about your hottest, coldest, wettest, sunniest game, whatever.
Yes.
Earlier in the week, I spoke to Rob Hornby and had about 5 minutes with him, and you'll hear here about his trip to Hucknall.
Oh, this was the one where he went to the police station and...
Yes.
Was a damn sight warmer, yes.
So Rob is about to explain it to us in his own imitable way.
In 5 minutes?
Yeah, I think we were on the phone about an hour, but...
he's never had a conversation that lasted 5 minutes.
No, but as you'll see, and make of it what you will, it certainly made me smile.
The very much abbreviated Rob Hornby to come up then. Excellent.
Rob, you replied to the tweet a couple of weeks ago about the... game that you would have been the coldest, the wettest, the warmest. And you've got an amazing story. You at Hucknall?
Yes. It was 1992. It was a Central Midlands League floodlit cup semi-final. We arrived at Hucknall. There was about four or five of us. And the pitch was already going a bit white. And we thought, And you could hear the crisp sound of the players as they were warming up. And I thought, the referee's going to come out in a minute and he's going to say, sorry, game off. But no, game kicks off and it was boring. About 15 minutes into the game, two policemen entered the ground, comes up to us and said, would you like to earn £10 each? So we thought, looked at each other. We need somebody for ID parade. Would all four of you like to come? So we chucked into the back of this paddy van, straight down to Hucknall Police Station. The client solicitor says I look too much like this client, so I get kicked out the ID parade, as my mates did. So I'm thinking, damn, I've lost a tenner here. When another policeman comes out another door and says, are you here for that ID? Would you come into my ID? I says, yeah, of course. So I stood on this ID. I comes out, signs two pieces of paper and gets 20 quid. That's me mate's only got a tenner. Chucked back into the paddy van, back up to the ground. By the time we got there, it had gone to extra time. It was 0-0. The police says to us that in the, thermometer in the van, it was -5 at the time. Right, we didn't expect the game to still be going on. Got there, it were totally solid, totally white, the pitch. Got there, into extra time, still 0-0. This old fella, he says, oh, it's been a terrible game. It went to 119 minutes and we thought, oh no, we've got a bit of penalties here. And then all of a sudden, somebody, it was a right mistake and goal scored. And I think everybody was relieved that we hadn't got to get to stand there with penalties and that, because it was the old Hucknall ground and there was very little seating just over the far side at the time. Sort of thing. Because when they built the stand behind the goal at Hucknall, anybody shot, it would lower than the crossbar, so it'd shoot onto Hucknall Road down the hill. So it was quite amusing, you know, how many footballs they'd lose in a game. We used to say they don't do a raffle here, they do how many footballs they're going to lose.
Brilliant. Oh, what a story. Yeah, thank you for responding to that. We got some great answers, but that really did make us laugh.
No sooner had David got over the shock of... the fact he'd got to get the sat-nav out to go and find his beloved highwayman for next season. Then we find out that the other love of his life, which is Bashley FC from down there in the New Forest, their chairman, Paul Lucas, has announced at the end of the season, he is going to leave the role. And of course, there's a bit more to that than meets the eye. And Mr. Pickerill's been on that case straight away.
Yeah, it was not probably quite such a shock that he was going at the end of the season, because he did indicate before Christmas that he didn't feel he could give the club the time and commitment that it deserved. Anyway, Paul Lucas, Mr. Lucas, has guaranteed the funding for the club over the past four seasons, along with the generous sponsorships from his companies, Banbury Builders and Glenmex. Bashir are now actively seeking somebody to ensure that the club remains on the upward path that his comprehensive backup has set it on. And yeah, I mean, the club were struggling before, and to be honest with you, he has worked miracles and put a smile on everybody's face down there again.
Yeah. Now, again, David, let's just take this to anybody, you not just Bashley, but anybody. He's took the club into step four.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a higher wage bill and it's a different ball game altogether. The assumption is he won't be sponsoring the next season. Suddenly, the club have got a massive wage bill. From where they are to where they have to go, they need coach travel for 90% of the games, I would have thought. And at this precise moment in time, no guarantee of any income from next season. That's worrying times, David.
It is. It nearly happened about 10 years ago as well, when a backer pulled out at that point. They're getting reasonable crowds at the moment, depending who they're playing. You're looking at 250, 350, and occasionally a bit more for a bigger game. The village they're based in has about, I think, 50 to 60 houses, something like that. They're on the edge of the sort of New Milton conurbation. Well, within a few miles as well, you've got New Milton Town, who admittedly aren't doing so well this season, but Lymington's only 9 miles away, Brockenhurst about eight, Wimborne's not far, and you've also got the pull of sort of Southampton not too far away, Totten, AFC Totten aren't that far. There are plenty of step five, step four, step three clubs, plus Bournemouth, Southampton and Portsmouth were within an hour's drive. So yeah, there's a lot of other things to possibly pull anybody that's interested in football away from putting money into the club. But if nothing else, they are a resourceful club, and they're quite bloody minded and will probably manage to survive by hook or by crook.
I hope for your sake they do, because you've had better weeks with your two football clubs, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, there was many seasons of sort of following Bashley when they've sort of reprieved pretty much two seasons going with relegation, sort of 9 points one season. I think it was two the next. So, you know, anything less than at that time, less than a sort of 4-0 moral victory away from home was a moral victory. So, or 4-0 defeat away from home even.
Now, you could, of course, do what some of them do and find two different clubs to support.
Thank you.
not that you will. Right, let's get on the train, because this is going to cheer David up, because he finally gets his chips tonight, and we finally get to the end of our poacher line. So I'm going to sit back and have a piece of cake and a nice drink of something while he chats away about railways and football.
Yeah, and as we found out when we visited earlier in the season, they are good chips as well.
They are.
Having travelled to the north of Skegness, the very tight Fursby Curve finally puts us on course for the seaside resort. Wainfleet is our next stop, and like Heckington, the village has a thriving youth football setup. Sadly, the adult team is no more. The glory years of being crowned Boston League champions in 1998-99, now a distant memory. One burst of speed through Haven House Station with its two stopping trains a day in 2022 and 2023 sadly only registered a total of 162 entries exits, making it the county's least used station. Finally, we arrive in Skegness. Railway enthusiasts will remember pairs of 20s on the Derby, a named Class 40 heading back to Manchester, and occasionally a Deltic having a day at the seaside on the London. All the summer Saturdays, it was a madness that justified keeping the line open. Sometimes you could even find a holidaymaker on one of these trains. Sadly, these days are long gone, with only one diesel unit every hour. Platforms are lying unused and unkempt, and the carriage sidings are now a buddleia haven as they quietly rust away in the salt air. The couple of hundred yards away from the station, the town's football club bask in their new purpose-built stadium. founded in 1947 as a successor to the two pre-war clubs, Skegness United and Skegness Blue Rovers, the new club started life in the Lincolnshire League before moving up the Midland Counties League. That was in 1958 to 1982, and then into its successor, the Northern Counties East League, before returning to the Lincolnshire League in 1983. After another short spell in the NCL, the Lilywhites are now enjoying life in the United Counties League. During the 1977-78 pre-season, Skegness Town played a pre-season match against Brian Clough's Nottingham Forest, and 9 months later, Forest became the champions of England. Before the match, make a point of walking down to the seafront and see the RNLI Skegness lifeboat, the £2.2 million Shannon-class boat Joel and April Grunnell that arrived in 2017, and it lives in a purpose-built house near the famous clock tower. That should leave you time for your fish and chips, the sand, and the realisation why the railways always told us on their posters, Skegness is so bracing.
There you are, you see, you're left in no doubt to the author of that little part by the mention of a lifeboat, but there you go.
It was spectacular when we went around, wasn't it? It was sat there nicely polished up, and you don't have to pay to go around. You can make a donation, and a nice little shop and a very friendly man and lady quite happy to tell you all about it.
I mean, our last trip to Skegness, if you put them in the order of enjoyment, the RNLI was number one, the fish and chips was number two, and the football was number three.
Yeah, and I think I struggled the longest to get you out of the lifeboat station.
Yeah, and after watching that
the other two, I don't think you could get to wait to get out of the football ground.
After watching that football match, I should have stopped there. But no, there you go. So there's our journey. You see, even in the depths of the countryside, there is still football. Maybe a lot of it's junior football, but junior football will eventually grow back into adult football. I think, writing that, researching that, I was quite pleased with the amount of football that I found.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting line to ride, because you get the bits, as you say, when you go from Hubbard's Bridge, sort of your train can race the cars down the road there. And you say you've got the obvious places like Sleaford and Boston, but the fact you were mentioning some of the little villages we called at and the thriving community clubs that are running there, it's just really nice to see. And I thoroughly enjoyed that one. It was quite surprising just where you found football clubs buried away within a short walk of the station.
Yeah, it was entertaining and different. Right, the final countdown, we are getting to that time of year, so we're talking about what's going to happen at the end of the season. And this is something else that's sort of changing almost daily, but this is the latest I can find.
Yes, Bishop Stortford, they've been relegated from the National League North. Hartbury University have been crowned champions of the Hellenic Step 6 division. Among the sides who have qualified for Step 5 playoff are Sherwood Colliery, Lincoln United and Loughborough Students from the United Counties League North, Wellingborough Town from the UCL South, Worcester City in the Hellenic League and Moneyfields from the Wessex League. While in Step 6, it's Bourne Town, Clipston, Blythe Town and Great Yarmouth. The first two sides to pass all the criteria to join the pyramid are the Yorkshire League side Middleton and Essex Alliance champions FC Barazi.
Middleton is that team we spoke about the other week, isn't it? Who play in, is it South League Stadium or something, a massive great stand and everything. So they can quite easily get gates up to about 3,000 apparently. So no problem with ground grading there. But since we did that, there's a couple more joining the list that would just await ground grading, but there's only going to be somewhere between 25 and 30, I would have thought, who pass the criteria.
I think
to come
so.
Up. So there may well be some reprieves. It's certainly, to my way of thinking, only the bottom club in Step 6 are going to be going down. I may be wrong, but the more you research it, the more that's the conclusion I'm coming up with.
I think so. The FA have always said that the bottom clubs will go down and they won't do reprieves. However, if you're going to make the division short and there is nobody in the geographical location that's got a ground to come up, what do you do? You can't run a short league again, can you? You're probably better off reprieving the club. Although, going back to Bashley, the season they only got 2 points and took a reprieve, it's kind of
Do you want reprieving if you if I mean, would Ollerton want reprieving from the Northern Counties East League? I don't think so.
No, I get the feeling from what Liam said that they are determined they're going to keep going this season. They're not just going to pull the plug for the integrity of the league. And it is just a case of we spoke to somebody the week who was oh, Hucknall, there were sort of every game's a cup final to the end of the season for survival. With Liam's case, it's really another ordeal or trial by fire that they've got to endure to get the season out of the way, and then he can probably do something about rebuilding the club and getting it back on a stable footing.
That's the way it should be done. I tell you, if you're looking for a club of the season or a team of the season, in my world, you're going to have to look a long way to look beyond Ollerton because they've had everything possible thrown at them, yet they're still fulfilling the fixtures. And they are not doing what many, many, many clubs have done is, oh, we'll call it today for this season. And oh, by the way, Mr. FA, we'll be all right again next season. Can you put us straight back in the pyramid? They haven't done that. They've carried on. And I think that's bloody commendable.
It
Right.
is.
Talking of the FA.
Yes, it seems they broke their own rules last season with the numbers of teams in each division. The rule states that each division in step five and six should have 20 teams, but exceptions can be made to accommodate 18 to 22. If it happens again this next season, I think the clubs are going to start appealing. The flip side of that is clubs need to be a little bit careful to get the sizes right. Some will probably take a sideways move into another league. And that never goes down well, or not very often.
It doesn't, does it? Yeah. I mean, yes, there are leagues with 24 teams in, and that's caused one hell of a struggle this season with the winter that we've all had to endure. And this season, apparently, some of the clubs are going to stick their heels in the ground and say, you know, to the FA, your own rules quite clearly state 22 is the maximum. And so, you know, we're going to make you stick to it. If they do that, and this is a particular problem in the northwest of the country because there's too many teams for leagues. They're going to start shoving them over to the Midland League. And that's where your problems begin because they don't want to come to the Midland League. Kendal Town will probably find themselves in the Northern League and travelling across the top of the Pennines every second week. They don't want to do that. They want to travel down the M6 to the northwest. That is where it all falls down if you're not careful. Should there be more divisions?
Problem is, if they make more divisions, your pyramid becomes wonky, and then you get a situation it's not equal promotion and relegation. And at the end of the next season, which of the wonky divisions do you put somebody into? So you still get the problem then. Somebody might end up moving even sort of 30 miles further west or east than they were actually planning to.
I agree, and you'll never hear this very often, but in this instance, I do have some sympathy with the FA because what you don't want in life is a wonky pyramid.
No, that's right. It doesn't, it's not one. It's not very stable. And if you've got one that's perfectly triangular and all the promotion, you know, the routes are clearly defined. You know exactly where you are at the beginning of the season. You think, right, if we win this one, we go into League X, and if we win that, and in 10 seasons we can be, you know, in the Premier League. Whereas suddenly, well, actually, if we win that one, we could end up going, you know, 80 miles to the south or something strange like that, which is happening. A lot of the clubs in the Leicestershire area are suddenly now becoming almost North London clubs, aren't they? There's some of the league teams they're playing.
They are, and that's the problem that is going to be happening. But okay, the biggest and arguably the best way, of course, it's bad because it's where it is. Ground up takes place over Easter in the southwest, so David's going to tell you all about that. It was a Scottish ground up last weekend, of which I think the rain probably won, but David's going to tell you about that as well.
Well, the reports I got back that the clubs that were able to host in the Scottish Groundhop made a great fist of it. They made everybody welcome. I think everybody was happy. But I got the feeling, I think two games probably fell to the weather. And I think geographically, I think one of the grounds was a little bit further away than we'd anticipated when we thought where it was. But yeah, there was lots of positive stuff coming out on Twitter and Facebook. All the usual suspects that do the Groundhops seem to be there and we're all making their sort of quarter yearly acquaintances, you know, and having a cup of tea together and discussing it. Now, looking at the southwest, it all kicks off on Thursday with Honiton hosting Sidmouth. before moving to Friday, where there are matches at Torrington, Torridge Side, Holsworthy, and it ends on Easter Sunday at Liscard, Elburton Villa, and Ivybridge. So if you're doing all of them, there's a little bit of, you know, Sidmouth is probably the furthest east, I think, isn't it? And you're down to, I'm trying to work out whether Liscard or Ivybridge are the furthest west, but there's still a fair distance across there.
It's going to be Liscard, isn't it? They're the only team that's actually, the only Cornish team in there, but they're not that far into Cornwall. So it's sort of, it's West Devon, East Cornwall, isn't it? So the best of luck to them, because there ain't been that much football played down there, as David's going to tell you in a few minutes. But it's normally very well organised. One of the friends of this show, Phil Hiscock, is the brains behind it. So I've got no doubt he will have booked Sunshine as well, because he's got friends in high places as Phil. So the sun will shine. It'll be a wonderful time, and we'll tell you all about it in the first show after Easter. We keep going on about grass pitches and the fact that it hasn't, everybody is suffering, some more than others. And the leagues are beginning to show some muscle, David.
They are. We've seen some very strange venues recently. The Callington versus Mullion postponement is the 200th of the season so far, vast majority being for the weather.
And this is just in the South West Counties Peninsula League. Sorry, I should have said that. This is one league, 200 postponements.
So, yeah, the club and the fixture secretary's job isn't a happy one on that one, is it? Plymouth Parkway have had 17 home matches postponed, leading to the Southern League ordering them to play their next two matches at a ground share. The next nearest available Step 3 ground turned out to be Yate Town, 130 miles away, the first of which was against Merthyr, and that resulted in a crowd of 115, and 108 of those travelled from Wales. The Devon Football Association's state-of-the-art 4G down the road at Newton Abbot didn't make the ground grading standards required. 20 seats under the limit and no turnstiles apparently the problem. Truro City are having to play their home matches at Gloucester, had Tuesday night's match abandoned due to an injury to one of the visiting players. That leaves 13 matches still to be played before the 20th of April. The West Country saw 300% of their average rainfall in February and had March's average by the middle of the month. With the many postponed matches happening, the Northern Premier League are following suit. Dunstan were the first, playing a couple of games at Consett and then Brickhouse Town. And now Sheffield and Carlton have followed suit. Dunstan certainly showed their unhappiness online about this due to the cost of renting a ground and losing revenue because you don't get as many fans coming through the gates. There's no ancillary revenue through your food and drink either. Locally, Claycross are using Shirebrook Town for their home games, and Selston, with four matches in 10 days, played their fixture against Birstall this week at Ilkeston's Towns Ground. And I think they got, 110 for that, and that's probably on a par with what they would normally expect to get at the parish. However, I think this time round, the good folks of Selston have actually come out to support the team, and they've been getting slightly better crowds.
Now, I've no idea of how much clubs are charging clubs to play on there, but I would suggest the going rate is somewhere between £200 and £250. It's a lot of money for the Selstons of this world and the Clay Crosses of this world to have to fork out. I don't know what the answer is. I'm just stating a fact that I think it's a lot of money for them to have to play. So my question to David here is around fixture rearrangements and the cost. Are the leagues doing the right thing by saying, you know, you have got to find somewhere else to play these games? These games have got to be finished by a set date, which is not the leagues doing, is the FA's doing. Or you'll be charged with non-fulfillment of fixtures for the season. In extreme circumstances like this season, should the season be extended by a couple of weeks, would it be such a great problem? I personally don't think so. But we call it ground grading, David, and they grade everything apart from the playing surface, which they don't seem to grade. Should there be standards of playing surface before clubs are let into the pyramid?
It's a very good question. You could argue yes, but I think if that was the case, you'd probably only have about 40% of the sides that are currently in the pyramid, probably playing in the pyramid. And again, it's another expense for some clubs that would probably never, ever allow them to join. I mean, you've got quite a few clubs are playing on resources that are shared by the council or the local authority. That they, you could argue in some cases, they're never going to be as good as some of the others. And how many clubs can actually afford that, to do that? I did notice there was a very sort of comprehensive statement came out from Carlton Town explaining about, you know, the problems they're having. And they were saying, okay, they kind of accept that. But the problems they've got is they need a club who can provide a pitch at step three or step four requirements. And they've said, well, that's okay, but it's very difficult because most of the nearest clubs are in Derbyshire and they're having the same issues because they go to Club X and say, can we hire your ground on Tuesday? And in a lot of cases, well, actually, another club 10 miles down the road's got it. So there is a lot of call on these facilities. And again, I don't know what the sort of cost is. I remember a few years ago, we spoke on another publication when there was a lot of wet weather and Basford United, Crispin Road kind of said, anybody got problems to get the game going on, you can use my facility over a couple of weekends, didn't need to get the games ahead. But Chris has got the same, or Basford have got the same problems now. Their pitch needs substantial or expensive work on it. They can't be as generous this time round. And not only that, if you use Carlton Town, if you're supporting Carlton Town, Basford's 8-9 miles. It's not the end of the world to go there, but not everybody can get there. Not everybody's got the time to do it. But imagine if suddenly, I don't know, where's the next pitch, and suddenly Carlton have got to travel to, say, Retford as an example, or they've got to go to Sleaford or somewhere like that to play a game. Suddenly the supporters, it's only going to be the diehards that are really going to want to make the effort, or will make the effort, or can afford to make the effort.
Yeah, the money's going out quickly, but it doesn't seem to be coming in as quick. I just think there's no reason at all that this season could not have been extended, even until the end of April, and play the playoffs over Mobank. You should probably playoffs. And yes, I know they keep the season alive and people love playoffs. The problem with playoffs is they're extending the season as well. When I was a kid, the top two went up and the top two got relegated. Full stop, end of conversation. We now make it a little bit more. Is it there for entertainment? Does it keep more clubs involved? Well, yes, it does keep more clubs involved. You know, I mean, let's go back to the United Counties at step six. If the top two went up, step six is finished now with sort of 10 matches left, hadn't it? Because you know that Bourne and Clipston are going to go up. So, yes, I would agree with you. It's the entertainment value and it keeps it going. So, yes, we probably should have playoffs. So the next thing along the line is, are these leagues too big? We've already had that conversation.
Yeah, it's strange. And I've noticed the trends happen. I seem to remember when I was a kid, the football season started when you went back to school at the beginning of August. Sorry, at the beginning of September. If you were lucky, you got a couple of friendlies in before you went back to school and that was it. Sort of football season ended with the FA Cup, usually the first weekend or thereabouts in May. You had a couple of months at school with cricket. You went the whole of the school season, the whole of the summer holidays before football started. Now, last year, I think we went to our first friendly pre-season before the schools had even broken up for the summer. And what happened with most of those games? They were all rained off, weren't they?
Yeah, and as I was reminded last night, and which is in some ways nice because it means people do listen to this publication, that I was criticising the fixture secretary for playing so many games earlier on. I suppose I should criticise him now for not playing enough.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, when Mr. Hughes came in, he did very sportingly say, well, you won't be saying that when it's all rained off, and we all laughed.
Yeah, we did.
So Ian is the rain god. It was his fault.
And I'm blaming Greta Thunberg. It's Ian Hughes' fault then. Right. Yes, I'll keep out his way when I see him. Right. Yes. Deep breath from David, because he's got a lot of news to talk about. Let's start totally locally.
Bottom of the table, Northern Counties East League club, Maltby Bayne are looking for their third manager of the season after Andy Whitehead, who only took over at Christmas, has resigned.
And, of course, the exodus of players started immediately after. Let's go around the country a little bit further with a couple of stories, I think.
Yes, Saturday's match between Jersey Bulls and Hawley Town had to be cancelled. According to Hawley, four of the matchday squad boarded the flight at Gatwick, but the rest were not allowed to board because their baggage was too large, even though they all had the same bags. It'll be interesting to see what the league makes of this one. AFC Rushden and Diamonds signed a keeper to cover for their unavailable custodian. Unfortunately, he didn't have a very good game, and he ended up being involved in an altercation with a supporter who'd pointed that out to him.
That's the tactful way of putting what happened.
Yeah.
Below the pyramid.
The Seven Oaks and District League has four divisions, and over the last month, they have lost one team per division. That's not good, is it?
Not clever, is it? It really isn't. The teams that we talk about, who's having a season that they won't want to remember.
The Western League side, Bishop Sutton, have now managed 2 points in a season that has seen them without a victory in 33 matches. While a little closer to home, Ollerton's only victory of the campaign took place on the 2nd of September, which I actually went to because we had a free Saturday. And their away record shows played and lost 20, scoring 10 goals and conceding 101. A defeat in last Tuesday's home match against Brigg would have seen the Miners relegated. The good news was that they took the lead on the half-hour mark. The bad news was that the generator for the floodlights failed and the match had to be abandoned. I mean, I did see a picture of the Briggs goalkeeper was in the generator room trying to mend it, and Brigg just went, oh, joy, we're coming back here midweek then, again.
But doesn't that just sum up Ollerton's season and Ollerton's luck? I mean, they haven't played a night match for a good while because of problems with the generator. They thought they got it fixed. It lasted half an hour and blew up again, which does make you think that there probably aren't going to be any more night matches at Ollerton's ground. But how they've kept that club going through everything is beyond me.
I bet Liam was wishing, I wish we were 1-0 up and it was like 86 minutes through, because I think even Brigg would have said, okay, fair enough, we ain't coming back on a Tuesday, we're not going to contest that result.
I know, it's absolutely crazy. Right, it's that time of year, we keep saying it. Some big matches to look out for near and far this time. We've found about four of them for all different reasons. David, what are the matches?
Sherwood Colliery against Loughborough Students, Renneth Miners Welfare against Radford, Lincoln Moorlands Railway versus Rustons, Curtin Brickworks against Blidith Miners Welfare, and Jersey Bulls against Farnham Town. Plenty riding on all of those, actually.
Or to put it another way, we said Sherwood need 4 points from four games. They couldn't have much tougher opponents than a very informed Loughborough Students. And a win for Loughborough Students will really open the door for Lincoln United. Renneth have got to keep winning. It's as simple as that. So that's a big match. Lincoln Moorlands and Rustons, two of the top four in the Lincolnshire League. Curtin Brickworks and Blidhoff, the winner of that, basically will go on to win their division. And Jersey Bulls against Farnham Town is third against first in an absolutely massive match down there in the Channel Islands. So cracking weekend of football to come. We're off. David's missing, he's on a romantic weekend somewhere, but you know, that's how it is. He just hasn't got the pace to last the full football season. I should be watching the football.
Mr. Reliable there.
I should be watching the football, and we'll talk about it all again as we do it next week. David, have we got a guest next week, or is it me and Lee?
No, as it's a run-up to Easter, I thought, should we get an egg in? Emma's ground guide, but we understand that Emma's washing her hair, so it's likely to be only Max as an Easter treat for you.
For you to get the wrong one.
Well, that's right, but unfortunately, Emma's ground guide is booking agent and everything's done through Max, so, you know.
Shocking. Enjoy your football. We'll both see you again next week. Goodbye.
Good night.